I just returned from Italy just, you know, yesterday, and we had our Torah Motion Jewish History trip to Italy. And last year we were in Central Europe. We're doing another trip next week to Central Europe. And when you travel, and I had really never been to any of these places until last year, never been to the sort of historical places in Jewish history. I hadn't been in Europe in 20 years. And you really see how Jews have lived everywhere. And the contribution they've made. You know, Italy has the longest standing Jewish community in the world. It's the only community in the world outside of Israel, but where they've had Jews continuously living for 2,200 years. Jews were never expelled from Italy. No other European country can say such a thing. And since the time of the Maccabees, there have been Jews. We don't consider it. We think of Ashkenaz part. Italy sort of is totally separate. It's not Ashkenazim, it's not Sephardim, it predates all of that. I say that just in context that if anybody wants to go on the trip next week, they can still go. It's a wonderful thing, and, you know, please come next year, we'll run other ones. But besides the commercial plot, really I say because the period of the 9 days and leading up to Tisha B'Av, so we're very cognizant of the fact that the wandering Jew. And we don't like to think of the land of Israel as a place. We have come back home to the land of Israel, but we're here tonight to hear really firsthand from people who lived in Gush Katif and were forced, you know, to leave. And from my personal perspective, to me, it's not the political issue. Whatever one thinks on a political movement, it's not for me. That's not the issue. Obviously, for many people, maybe it is, and obviously, if you live there, it's very important. But even if you feel that this was a necessary, important move at the time, forget hindsight, but at the time, still, the personal pain, I remember when I was in Yeshiva many years ago, so Rav Nevensal, on Yeshiva, the Rav of the Old City, said that if ever Israel were to have to give back Yudah and Shomron as part of a peace agreement, even if you think it's a good thing, you should have to rip Kriya, because the fact that we have to do that in order to maintain peace, to get peace, is itself a sad story. So it's really, I think it's very appropriate for the period of the 9 days that we have a little bit of a presentation on the topic, what's going on, to help the people who were expelled from their homes already seven years ago, right around this time of year, right then in the summertime. So I'm gonna turn over the microphone to Yitz Friedman, who works in Dropkick Thief, works to help people, who introduce our speakers. So he'll speak for a few moments, then he'll show a short video, then we'll hear from our speakers, and then we'll open up the floor to questions. Our speakers will speak in English, and they'll throw in a few Hebrew words. I said it's okay. If you don't know how to say something in English, I think a lot of people here know Hebrew. If not, we'll help it out. So, okay, Bakasha.
Thank you, Rabbi Jay. My name is Yitzchak Friedman, and I'm here representing the people of Gush Katif. People have lost their homes and their employment during the disengagement 7 years ago. The organization I work with is called Jav Katif. Jav Katif was founded by Rav Yosef Tzirimon, Rav Alon Shvut, a very special person. And his mission was to get these people back on their feet after the disengagement. That is what Jav Katif is all about. 7 years. 7 years is a long time. This year, Tisha B'Av marks the anniversary of the 7 years of disengagement. And it was the time where 9,000 people that were living in the Gush Katif area, 9,000 people were asked to pick up their families, leave their careers, leave their homes that they built with their own two hands, and go out and find and start a new life. 9,000 people. Who are these people that decided to live on a strip of land in the Gaza Strip, surrounded by Arabs, with security problems, having to wear guns to work every day? There were people just like you and I, There were people that when they told you they were moving to Israel, everybody in the shul said, Kol HaKavod. Those are the people that got on the airplane and decided to live in Gush Katif. What was so special about Gush Katif area? Why did they choose that piece of land from all the pieces of land in Israel? Anybody that's ever been there, I had the opportunity one time to stay in a hotel there. Anybody that saw the beautiful sand and the ground that was there, it was a special, special place. The community life was amazing. The families, every neighbor was a family to the other one. And there was one special element about that land that was different than any other part of Israel. If you planted something, you got the most beautiful produce that you ever saw. There was tomatoes, there was cherry tomatoes started from there. Flowers, fruits, vegetables, all the stuff without bugs that they've created from over there, it was all their creations, and they watched the land that for thousands of years was not being worked on, would not raise anything, and with their own eyes they were able to see growth. So these people that were community people, they were charity givers, they were people that family is important to them, work was important to them, Beit Midrash, Tefillah, just like you and I, that was the people that were living in Gush Katif, 9,000 of them. Their vision was a Zionistic pioneering vision to rebuild the land of Israel. That was their vision, that was their goal to go out there. In 1995, Yitzhak Rabin said that the Gush Katif area is essential to the security of Israel. It gave the security to the people living over there that it would never happen. And that's why they felt secure enough to be able to build their homes there. And they built their homes with their own two hands. Tonight, I've prepared a small presentation for you guys. From destruction to renewal. Tisha B'Av, what destruction is, it's hard for us, Tisha B'Av, to be able to think about what is the fact that a house burnt down so many years ago. But when you see today's Tisha B'Av, and you're able to see the pain of the house, what it feels like when a house is torn down, that helps us to be able to feel that pain. These people have to rebuild their lives and get back on their feet, and I want you to be able to hear this story straight. Tonight I brought with you two special people of the 9,000 that were there. Lieutenant Colonel Tsuri Ganesh and his daughter Moran, that lived in a beautiful home in Ali Sinai, which Tsuri built with his own two hands. He was a person that served in the army, gave everything he could to the army, and did whatever he could to stop the disengagement. He ran from government office to do whatever he can to stop the madness, but nobody would listen. In the end, the house was taken away from him. And he's here tonight to share his story. And before he starts his story, I have a brief video for you to watch.
Thank you.
Explain a little bit what Tui does for our organization, Job Katif, now after the destruction. Tui got dealt lemons in his life, really bad lemons. But he decided that he was going to make lemon juice out of it. Most people that left Gush Katif, it took them many years to just figure out what to do next. But Tzuri knew what he had to do next. He took upon himself to join our organization, which basically goes into every single home that has issues, that can't get back on their feet again. He goes into that room where the man is sitting there, who for 20 years made a beautiful parnassa, great living, selling cherries, tomatoes, whatever it was. Now his land is taken away, his house is taken away, and he sits there and he can't figure out what to do next. The only thing he knows is how to plant. That's all he knows. And he sits down with them and he says, "Trust me, life can get better. We could do it together." And he goes in there and he speaks to them heart to heart, and he gets one by one out of that dark, depressed room, and he picks them up. And he takes them to a place that they just start doing things and they can just focus on the good things of life. So that is Tzuri, and I would like to bring him to the stage a minute to share with you his story.
Erev tov lekulam. קצת אחרי הסרט הזה קצת קשה, אבל אני אחזור. תראו, אז מוכרנו בגוש קטיף 120 שנה. אני עכשיו אדבר על גוש קטיף בכלל, אדבר גם על צפון השומרון, כי גם שם היו יישובים, וגם בהם אנחנו קובעים את כאבה, וגם מטפלים גם בהם. גוש קטיף, גוש קטיף, נשלחו אנשים להפרש לשממה. אנשים נשלחו כדי לבנות את ארץ ישראל. שם לגור, שם להגן על המדינה. הקמנו שם יישובים לתפארת, יישובים מוצלחים, אנשים נחמדים, אנשים טובים, אנשים שעזרו אחד לשני, אנשים שחיו כמו משפחה. וזה היה מנוהל בצורה כזאת מסודרת בתוך המעגל המשפחתי. זה היה האבא יוצא לעבודה והאימא מגלה את הילדים בבית.
Hi. For those who doesn't understand Hebrew, I will short you a bit about what it said. He said exactly what Yitzhak said, but a little bit longer. Okay. He said that we moved to Gush Katif because we want to have a good community life. We had the best friends, like a whole big family there. It was people who wanted to do the best they can for Israel. They planted the land and they make beautiful families, a lot of families, religious people, the Torah and everything was important to them. And they did everything they could to have a great life, and they succeeded it really, really good. And he started to say that the families was organized that way, that the father was the main provider of the family. He works. They're always independent. They have their land. They planted from tomatoes to flowers. And the mom was sitting home with the children, raising them. She doesn't have other job than that. They live in big houses. They were rich people. They live in big houses. They have big land. And I let him continue.
הייתה שם הצלחה גדולה, זאת אומרת כל מה שגידלו שם נקנה בחוץ לארץ והרבה הרבה כסף. העולם קנה את היבול של המקום הזה והצליחו, המשפחות הצליחו מאוד עד שבאה הגזרה לגרש היהודים מהחבל ארץ הזה, החבל ארץ הנפלא הזה, ולהוציא את האנשים מהבית, להוציא אותנו מהבית, שאין שום סיבה בעולם שזה יקרה. ואני לא נכנס לפוליטיקה עכשיו ולמה זה קרה ולמה אנחנו עכשיו גם נענשים על זה, אבל לא על זה העניין. העניין זה שאנשים האלה, תוך כדי שקיבלנו את הגזרה הזאת, נאבקנו, אנחנו יצאנו, אנחנו נלחמנו, אנחנו דיברנו עם הרבה אנשים, שרים, חברי כנסת, עשינו צעדות, עשינו צומות, מה לא עשינו כדי לבטל את הגזרה הזאת, אבל אנחנו לא הצלחנו. אנחנו לא הצלחנו להעביר את רוח הגזרה הזאת.
He said that Gush Katif has a lot of export, and then we heard about the government want us to be out, and we tried to do everything we could to stop that from happening. I started with meetings with Knesset members and with all the politicians we could, was on TV shows, on the radio. They even tried to bribe the people that could vote against that with millions of dollars. And we made a march to Jerusalem from Gush Katif, and him and the whole family will march to Jerusalem. And we met to the Prime Minister. We signed people on petitions. We tried to do everything we could to stop that from happening. They didn't sleep, mostly him, but all of us. We weren't sleeping for days and nights for at least 3 months. And we did everything we could, and nothing helped us. So he's going to tell you about how does it feel since we understood that it's really going to happen?
אחרי כל המאבק שלא הצליח, אז יצאנו מהבית, הוציאו אותנו מהבית, אנחנו לא מוכנים, אנחנו לוקחים את הדברים שלנו, הולכים, בהתחלה הלכנו לאוהלים, הלכנו לבתי מלון, הלכנו לכפר נופש חיילים, הלכנו לבתים של אנשים, לא מאורגנים כמו שאנחנו, ואחרי שנה שראינו שזה כבר לא הולך, אי אפשר לחיות בכל מקום, זה בסך הכל משפחה, אז עברנו לגור בקרווילות. קרווילות, כל אחד בקרווילה במקום אחר בארץ, ומיד אחרי זה, כשגרנו בקרווילה, המשפחה שלי לפחות בקיבוץ קרמיה, אחרי שבוע חטפנו טילים לתוך היישוב, ואז ביום שישי, לפני כניסת שבת, עזבנו הכל, והלכנו לגור אצל ההורים שלי, אצל חמותי, ורק אחרי זה שכרנו בית, כבר שש שנים אנחנו גרים בבית הזה ומחכים שפעם אנחנו נבנה את הבית שלנו. אבל אני מדבר על עצמי, אני מדבר כל גוש קטיף למעשה, כל האנשים עברו את אותו תהליך שלי, כשאני אספר אחר כך כמה שיותר קשה לאנשים יותר ממני מי שגר בגוש קטיף.
What happened then? We started. We understood we had to move. As you can, you watched the movie. We were at our house, sleeping on the floor, because everything was out already, and we just waited for the army to come and tell us, okay, now it's your last minute here. Take your stuff and go out. And then we went out. And we went on the first night, on the first week, we sleep on tents. A lot of people sleep on tents, and then we moved to a hotel, and then to a different hotel, and I think three hotels, and then we moved to live in a mobile house. Most of the people who was living in the houses now, at least for the first 2, 3, 4 years, live in mobile houses. And we lived in Kalmia, is the name of the place, and after a week that we lived there, a rocket hit the house next to our house. And my brother and my sister, they were little, and they have a complete trauma about they ran outside, and they saw the father of the family lying down on the floor, blood all over him, the baby, my mom took the baby, and he wasn't even crying, she started to shake him so it could start crying, and the whole house was crushed down completely, and it was Friday in the morning. And then my brother starts crying and said, okay, we just moved from our house, I don't want to live here, I prefer to live in a tent and not to have a rocket on my house. So an hour before Shabbat, my dad took everyone in the car and we moved to my grandmother's house. It was 2-room condo. We lived there for I think 2 weeks. It was too hard, and we moved to my other grandmother for another 3 months. And then he decided that that's enough. For 1 year to move 6 places, that's enough. And emotionally, they were so depressed that they suggested that at least we live in a proper house. So they bought the first house in Ashkelon that we live in today. But most importantly is to say that a lot of people still doesn't have a home. They still live in mobile houses for many reasons. One is because they waited that they have a relative community to move in. And the government gave us land in different places in Israel that we can live. Yeah, we're supposed to live in different lands to build our houses all over again. But our land, for example, still not ready to move, still not ready to start build. So just next year, they will start the work, and then we can start building our houses. So it will be 8 years, and people 8 years living in mobile houses, And I don't know if you know what a mobile house is, but for people who live in 300 feet house and have like a really, really big land, to move to three house room, the mobile house is three rooms, including the living room, and they have like 200 meters outside. It's like a small ghetto to live in. So for 8 years, it's really, really tough for people. And he would talk about the money, and then I explained, but the money that they gave us is fade away. I mean, you live in 8 years with this money when you don't have a home and you don't have a job, because maybe you're talking to us.
אחרי שאנשים יצאו החוצה וגרו בקרווילות, בבתים האלה, מה עושים עכשיו? רוב האנשים, הרוב הגדול של האנשים הוא היה חקלאי. והאנשים האלה בני גיל 50 ויותר. וזה מה שהם יודעים, לעשות חקלאות. אבל איפה עושים חקלאות? אין שטחים, אין כלים, אנשים בטראומה של גירוש. האמא שהייתה מגדלת את הילדים, כבר לא מגדלת את הילדים, הולכת לעבוד כדי להביא אוכל הביתה. האבא בטראומה בבית, מה שהוא יודע לעשות זה חקלאות. הילדים בבית מסתכלים על האבא, כמה שזה קשה לראות שאבא בא, יושב בבית ולא עובד, מה שהיה פעם בשמחה בבית, נהפך למקום שהוא ממש קודר, חושך, ממש קשה מאוד לחיות בבית כזה, שאין חיוך בבית כזה. וגם אין עתיד, כי אנשים כאלה, כבר מה יכולים לעשות אנשים כאלה כדי לשקם את החיים שלהם? וכשבן אדם כזה יושב בקרווילה ועובר עוד יום, ומי שמכיר, מי שראה, מי שיודע, ניצן, זה כמו איזה, כמו גטו כזה גדול, ויש אנשים שבונים את הבתים אחרי כמה שנים. אז כשבונים בתים, מה שקורה, כשהמשפחה עוזבת את הבית, אז מוצאים את הקרווילה גם. אז השכן מסתכל ואומר, מצד אחד הוא שמח, הנה חבר שלו עזב את הבית, בן הבית. מצד שני, הוא שואל מה איתי, מתי אני עזב את הבית, מתי אני אבנה בית. והגענו למצב כזה היום, 7 שנים, שזה הרבה זמן, יש אנשים שאומרים, זהו, פה אני אמות. בקרבי לעשות אני אמות, אין לי סיכוי לבנות הבית, אין לי כסף, כל הכסף שהיה לי, נזבזתי למשפחה שלי, אין לי מה לעשות עם זה, בקרבי לעשות זה היה
He said that when people move to the caravan, to the mobile houses, all the roles inside the family changed. The father that was a farmer, all you know, he had to work the land, and most of the people were 50, 60 years and up, and they now have no job and no career, and there's nothing else they know to do. And when you put them in this small house, they're already depressed about leaving their houses, leaving their community, and now they have no job. And the mom that used to sit in the house and raise her children needs to go out and find a job, because there's nothing to live from, and the money that the government gave us supposed to be saved to build the house in the future. So the dad still at home depressed because he has no job, and he has the main role in the family, and now he's nothing. And the kids look at him, that's what people tells us, that that's how they feel. They feel like now they're nothing in front of their children. Their children look at them, what are you doing sitting all day at home? Go find yourself a work. And I'm 60, there's nothing else I know to do besides working my land. They told to the government, give us land for us to work. That's what we know to do. But there's no land and there's no money to buy. Even if there is land, for some people, they receive the land from the government. But they have no tools and they have no money to pay the people to work with them. And I think I already said that most of the families have 6, 7, 8, and 15 children. And they were able to provide them properly when they lived there. And now they have no job, so the money is almost, I think I can say in dollars, it's like $4,000 at least for a month for a family with 8 children live properly in Israel. So for each month and for 7 years, there's nothing else from their money. And now even if their land ready to build on, they have no money to build the houses. So he just telling you a little story about Nitzan. This is the place where most of the tough cases live today. It's the small mobile houses that's very, very, very close one to another. And when someone is finally succeeding and he's finished build his house, the government come and literally take the house up and move it away. So when a neighbor saw that, he said, oh, I'm so glad for him that he has a house that he succeeded, but it's making him more sad, like, what about me? He succeeded, I'm here, there's no future for me, I have no money to build my life again. So the sentence that we hear always is, I'm dying here in this caravilla. This is where I'm going to die, there's no future for me, there's nothing who can help me, so this is where I'm going to die.
אז ככה, אז יש עוד מאות אנשים, מאות משפחות שאין להם פשוט עתיד. זאת אומרת, כמה שהם מנסים לעזור, אנשים בזבזו את כל כספם, אנשים נשארו בלי בתים, אנשים רוצים לחיות, והם חיו בחיים ברמה הגבוהה ביותר בארץ ישראל. והם נמצאים ברמה הכי נמוכה, גם מבחינה מורל, גם מבחינה כספית, כלכלית. אין אנשים האלה תקווה, אנשים האלה כמה שמנסים, ואני עובד בג'וב קטיף, אני עבדתי, אני כשהשתחררתי, כאילו, כשגורשנו מהבית, הייתי כמו כולם במשבר, לא עבדתי, גם אשתי עובדת סוציאלית לא עבדה, שנים לא עבדנו, וכשפנו אליי ואמרו לי, תשמע, בוא תעזור לאחים שלך, אפשר לעזור להם לשפר את המצב, אז אני הצטרפתי לג'וב קטיף, והקדוש ברוך הוא נתן לי את המתנה הזאת, לעשות חסדים עם אנשים, לעזור לאנשים, אני מכיר את הבעיות של אנשים מקרוב. האנשים האלה מאוד 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 מסכנים. האנשים האלה, מי שנשאר היום, יש הרבה הרבה מהם חולים, הרבה מתו משברון לב, יש אלמנות, יש יתומים, יש אנשים שהם איבדו את המחשבה לעתיד בכלל. ומה שהתפקיד של ג'וב קטיף הוא לעורר להם את החיים, להבין להם שיש לנו סיכוי ולא לא, לא נגמר. בסך הכל אפשר עוד להמשיך לחיות, אבל כל זה תלוי בכסף. כי בכסף, לצערנו הרב, שאין אותו, אפשר לעזור לאנשים האלה כדי לחדש את החיים שלהם. בסך הכל מגיע להם אזרחי מדינת ישראל הטובים ביותר, מגיע להמשיך לחיות. אם תרצו, בשמחה רבה אני אספר לכם סיפורים. קשים מאוד, המשפחות שאני מכיר אותן אישית, וזה הרבה מאוד מאוד משפחות שנמצאים במצב הכי קשה שאפשר לספר על אנשים.
After the disengagement, he told you about himself and about my mom. Their job was outside of Gush Katif. They were the lucky one. That they didn't lose their jobs or their careers or their income because of the situation. So, and they were, I know, I lived with them at the house, they were really, really, really depressed. They were in deep depression, him and his mom, and were 5 children in the family. 4 of us were really in a bad shape. I mean, crying the whole day, arguing a lot. He left the army. When he heard that the government about the decision, he said, okay, goodbye to the army, I'm leaving. And they told him, you have to stay here for another 2 years, you signed for another 2 years. And he said, I don't mind, discharge me, I don't want to be in the army anymore. And my mom is a social worker, so even though they both was without a job for 3 years, because the mental situation that they were in. And those are the easy cases. So people who lost everything was even more depressed than him. And we started to hear stories even 3, 4, 5 months after this that a lot of, in LSNI we were only 90 families. And we heard about 10 of them that getting divorced. And it's something about, I don't know exactly, but something about 15% of the population of Gush Katif that having some kind of or divorced or separated, everything that including this, a lot of illness, a lot of people died from a broken heart, a lot of people took their life, and a lot of people now, every day you hear that, I'm going to take my life now, I'm going to make it suicide, there's no hope for me, so I prefer to die than to live like this. He said that he got a gift, he got the chance to help others, and that's why he joined to the Job Katif. And he meets every day a lot of very poor families, a lot of widows that have nothing to live from, and orphans. And he can tell you now, and he can tell you one by now if you want after that, a very tough story about those people that lost every hope in their life. And the only way that we can help them and Job Katif help them is with money. And the money is no more there. I mean, Job Katif giving people a second opportunity for life. They train them to have new jobs because they have nothing that they know how to do. So they pay them for courses, for classes. They help them with food. They help them with, give them loans and consolation. I don't know exactly how to say it, but consult them how to open a business. And even therapy. With
psychotherapy.
Almost everybody that still lives in the mobile houses have therapy, gone to therapy. So the money is helping for many different ways, but the main purpose of this money is to find people another chance in life to start over with buying them land, with buying them the tools to work the land, with paying the payrolls, to start over, to have a second chance in life.
Job Katif gets 3-1 matching from the Israeli government. They basically say, you bring us 25% of the money, we'll give you 75% more. But the problem is that we're having a couple of times, 7 years gone by, there's a lot of needy causes out there. So we have tough times, but the government gives us 3-1. We're the only organization in entire Israel that gets matched 3-1.
Do you know how many 9,000 people have?
Yeah, I would say that right now about 2/3 of the 9,000 people are on their feet and okay now. 2/3 are okay. Any questions for them?
I'm just curious, how come the Israeli Moshav is moving from farming?
So, like you were saying, there's certain lands that were put aside for them to be able to restart their farms. Some of them are getting started now. Some of them, the land isn't the same type of land, so it doesn't match what they were good at. And some of them, even though they were given the farmland, per se per acre, but they can't build their house next to that land, so they're still living the caravan, so it doesn't really help them that there's a piece of land that they could possibly get to use, so they rent it out for pennies on the dollar for other people to work the land.
And many of them didn't even get a relative land.
I'm just going to have a short video about Jeff to teach you understand a little bit.
זה היה פשוט טראומה קשה. אני זוכרת עד היום שעמדנו שם בבית ואנחנו פשוט בוכים, אנחנו לא יודעים מה לעשות עם עצמנו.
בהתחלה שיצאנו, שמו אותנו בתוך אוטובוסים ולא ידענו איפה ללכת. הגענו לזה בית מלון בלילה, הילדים, הנכדים, היה ממש קשה. כמה ימים לקח לנו לגלות את האמת, זה לא היה חלום, זה היה אמת.
זה משהו שאי אפשר להתגבר עליו ביום אחד. זה גם לשקם את המשפחה, זה גם לשקם את הקשר עם החברים, זה לשקם את הכלכלה, את התעסוקה. הכל במקביל זה מאוד 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 קשה.
המשמעות היא פשוטה, זה מכת מוות.
נשארתי חודשים בבית ולא ידעתי מה לעשות עם עצמי. גם המצב הכלכלי, בעיקר המצב הנפשי, אתה לא יודע איך לעשות על עצמך. ואתה חושב מה לעשות. ופתאום אתה שומע איזושהי שמועה שעוברת מיטה לאוזן שיש משהו כזה שנקרא ג'וב קטיף. אנשים שרוצים לעזור ומתיישבים גוש קטיף. ואתה קצת לא מאמין, אבל פתאום דופקים בדלת, ואנשי ג'וב קטיף מופיעים בבית, והם אומרים, באנו לעזור.
אני הגעתי לג'וב קטיף במטרה, במחשבה שאני בא בעצם לסייע להקים עסקים. ומה שגיליתי מאוד מאוד היה, שזה בעצם הצד הפחות, מה שבעצם יותר עשינו זה היה להקים ולשקם את המשפחות, את האנשים, והצינור שלנו היה, זה בעצם דרך העסקים.
זה ייחוד מאוד מאוד גדול, שנותן לנו את האפשרות לטפל באותה משפחה בראייה הוליסטית, ומשם אנחנו מתקדמים, בכל תחום שאנחנו נגשים במשפחה, כי אנחנו מבינים ויודעים שרק ככה בן אדם יכול להתפנות ולמצוא תעסוקה ולהתמיד באותה תעסוקה.
אנשים של ג'וב קרטיף זה לא אנשים, זה מלאכים. מלאכים שידעו להבין אותנו. הם כאילו שהיינו טובים בתוך הים, וזה כולנו לא גלגל, הרבה גלגלים. לכל אחד, לפי הגודל שלו ולפי המצב שלו. ואני במיוחד זכו לי גלגל, שזה גלגל של צמחים. בגוש קטיף היה לי עסק של צמחים אחרי. ובזכותם הקמתי את זה מחדש, מזה אני מתפרנס. יש לי כבוד, אני מרגיש שאני לא פרזית, אני מייצר.
מעבר לסיוע שאנחנו מניקים להם בתחומי הפרנסה והעסקים והכלכלה, צריכים סיוע וליווי הרבה יותר מעמיק בתחום השיקום האישי בעצם, המשפחתי, הקהילתי.
ואז הם שבו איתי ואמרתם שהחלום שלי זה שיהיה לי אופטיקה ובדיקות עיניים, והם אמרו, טוב, בוא נראה איך עושים את זה, איך מוצאים את זה לפועל. ואתה שמח לראות שגם אתה, שאתה שש שנים בתוך המצב הזה וקשה לך, ויש אנשים שהנה, גולם חושבים עליך ולא שוכחים אותך ובאים לעזור לך. והנה היום האופטיקה עובדת על הצילה ואני עובדת פה. וזה זכותה.
המדינה הפכה אותה להיות עוזר המבצע שלה, היא מנהלת חלק מהפעילויות, אבל בנוסף. מי ששואל אותי את השאלה למה היום שש שנים אחרי ההתנתקות עדיין יש צורך בארגון כמו שלנו, אני לוקח לסיור בדרך והחיים של הקרווילות, מהבתים הזמניים, ואני מנסה להסביר איזה מוצר נמצאים שם. האווירה, המצב הנפשי, הדיכאון, החוסר מעש, אין ספק שקיים צורך גדול בארגון כמו שלנו היום שש שנים אחרי ההתנתקות.
אנחנו אישית רואים בעבודה שלנו שליחות, וזה נותן לנו כוח ונותן לנו יכולת. אנחנו רואים חסדים בדרך, עזרות בדרך, אנחנו רואים הצלחות. אנחנו מבחינתנו זה לא עבודה, אנחנו באים לעזור לאחים שלנו.
הצדקה הכי יפה זה לתת כלים לבן אדם שיתפרנס במו ידיו. צדקה שאתה נותן למישהו והוא כל הזמן מחכה לכסף שלך כדי לחיות, זה לא חסד. החסד שאתה נותן לבן אדם תקווה שהוא שווה, הוא שווה, הוא שווה, ואני ג'וב קרטיף נתן לי את העזרה שאני שווה.
Coming to an end very quick. We've got 12 months to raise $1 million in order to get matched another $3 million, and at the end of 12 months, it's goodbye. So it's all over, we pack up. And there's still plenty of work to be done. So, unfortunately, these people are losing hope every day, and we have to try to help them. I myself am new at Job Katie, to tell you the truth. 6 weeks ago, I happen to know Rav Rimon for a while. I'm a very close friend of his, and I admire him very much. But, you know, I said, it's been 7 years, so what's going on? So I decided to drive down to Nitzan without telling anybody and just walk around. And I saw a chayal walking together with a guy next to him, and I just pulled over my car and I said to him, are any of you from Gush Katif? So, not the chayal, the guy standing next to the chayal, he was about 17, 18 years old, says, I'm from Gush Katif. Said, how's it going? So he said to me, I'm too good. So, what do you mean? Says, I said, did you build a house yet? Are you building a house? Says, maybe soon. I said to him, is your dad working? He said, no. Dad hasn't worked in 7 years, sits home. I said, can I go speak to your dad? No, I really have to find out if the people really need to support this cause. Can I just sit down with him and speak to him? He said, my dad doesn't let anybody in the house. And the only person he speaks to is my mother when he screams at her. And that's what's going on in my house. I said, so situation, that's it? So he told me, whatever you could do to help. So I didn't need anything after that. I understood that this cause is still a needed cause, and that's why I'm here in North America trying to see what I can do to help these people that could be helped, should be helped, get back on their feet. Most of the people think that nobody remembers them. I think the people, if they're reminded, they will remember them. And it's important for me to bring back the message that people still remember them and care about them. Thank you for coming tonight. Appreciate it.
I really hope that it won't happen again ever to anyone. And now I can tell you, maybe it's what I think and it doesn't have to agree with me, but I think that if it would make any change, anything that could benefit Israel, I said, okay, we suffered a lot of people still suffering, but at least something good come out of it. But besides the fact that rockets been sending from my house to my new house now in Ashkelon, that's all. And the only thing that I advise them to do different than what we did is, first, don't ever say it won't happen. We were sure until the last week that it won't happen, that something that the Prime Minister or someone will finally will wait and say, okay, that was a really bad mistake, it won't happen. And in the last week, we saw that there is no hope, and we get really stressed up. I mean, where do we go from here? I mean, most of us didn't know where to go. I mean, the government told us, we put you in some place, and then we give you a different settlement for you to move. It didn't happen. I mean, we moved to a hotel for 6 months, and then we were supposed to be all of us together. I mean, Elena was my family, and this is the only place I knew. And the government gave us 7 different areas for Elena to move. I mean, 20 families here, 20 families here, and 20 families here. There were no place that we all could sit together. So my first advice is, don't ever say it won't happen to me. The second one is, be prepared. I mean, with something, even think about the chance that it will happen, be prepared about a relative house, a relative community. Look for something that will save you and you won't be stuck in this mobile house for the rest of your life. And take care of the children. Because I can tell you my personal story. My little brother, he is now 15. He was 8 when we left LA tonight.
And my dad just asked him a month ago, what do you think now? I mean, we're going to raise money for Job Katif. What if you could say one sentence to those people, what would you say? What's the difference between L89 and Ashkelon that you live now? And he told him, in L89, I was the whole day outside playing with my friends, and now I'm all day in the house. I never leave the house. And it's for him, for me too, because he's my brother, but for my parents it's really hard. We have a lot of crying every Saturday because he still has some, he has a traumatic experience from living in his house, and he said, okay, I tell you another story. He told him, okay, Omer, we're going to go to live in Ramat Golan. And he said, I'm not going to live in Ramat Golan, they're going to get it back. I don't want to live there. And he told me, no, it's Ramat Golan, let's do. I mean, they're not going to give away Ramat Golan. And he said, no. You say that about L-S-N-I. I'm not going to live in anywhere. I can live in Ashkelon, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa. That's it. All the other parts of Israel, they can evacuate. I don't want to live there. And I was in my second year in university, and my grades were really, I was an excellent student in the first year, and the second year, I was a bad one. And I told him, Omer, my situation is not, your situation is bad, my situation is bad, everyone's bad. Just, you cannot stay at home the whole day. It's been 6 months and you didn't left your room for 1 minute. And he told me, one day I will leave my room, I will leave my house, I find other friends to play with. And unfortunately, 7 years after that, and he's still in the same situation. So maybe it's not unusual. Most of the people does have friends and go out, but he still doesn't. So as much as the family can, protect the children. I mean, don't let them experience everything. I mean, if you can, don't let them see everything. Don't let them watch you crying for months. He's really, really doesn't feel good. My sister too. The movie that you saw, it's a really, really short one. It's a part of a movie that BBC made of us. They were staying in our house for 2 weeks before everything happened. And exactly a minute after they stopped the movie, you can see my sister. She was yelling and screaming, I don't want to leave, I don't want to leave. If I leave here, this will be the last time that I saw my room, and I don't want to leave. And he succeeded to convince her to go out with him. And then they walked outside, and when she got to the end of the pathway for the house, she turned and ran straight to the house. She hung on the door and she said, I'm not moving, because if I'm leaving, I will never see my house again. And it was like for an hour, something like an hour to convince her to leave. And all the screaming and the crying, so children doesn't have, there was nothing ever before in the world, I think, that was like this. I mean, no one knows what's going to happen, so there's nothing we could do to prepare them or us. We didn't know how fast, and that's my own advice.
אם אנשים אחרים עכשיו אומרים להם שהם הולכים לפנות הבית שלהם, תן להם יצא, איך הם מתנהגים? אני אגיד, לא טוב טוב. אני אומר, אחרי הניסיון הזה, לא עוזבים את הבית. בשום פנים באופן. בשום פנים באופן. שום דבר, לא עוזבים את הבית. מתים שם. אין מצב כזה, חס וחלילה, שאם יש גזרת פינוי, גירוש, לא משנה שתקראו לזה, אני הייתה שלי, אחרי שהיה הגירוש שלנו, אנחנו, זה מה שהיה התוכנית שלנו. אנחנו לא עושים את המקום. אנחנו נשארים שם בכל מחיר. כי המחיר של לעזוב, זה מה שקורה היום. אני, ברוך השם, לא מתלונן את ראש ברוך הוא. אני, כשאני רוצה, אני מרגיש, ברוך השם, בסדר גמור. יש אנשים שמתו, יש אנשים שחולים, ויש אנשים שהמשפחה שלהם נהרסה והתגרשו, וזה קשה מאוד. אין יותר גרוע מלהיות מגורש. לכן, אסור שיהיה גירוש בשום מקום.
Does anyone here doesn't understand what he said? Yeah. You know, now, I think yesterday in Israel there was something in the newspaper that the courthouse rethinking about it, that it's probably was legal, the houses, so maybe, I don't know.
Well, it was bought in good faith. What was it, 8 years ago or 10 years ago? They were bought in good
faith. I think more than that.
Yes.
So I don't know why they just now remember that this is their, I don't know, but it can happen anywhere. I mean, he thinks that you can say, I'm not moving, no matter what, I'm not moving. But you probably watch TV and saw other places, not Palestine, but other places that fought with the army, and there was, we didn't do that. I mean, we stayed at our homes until the last minute. The pilot came to our house, and because he was wearing his uniform, he said, okay, your rent is much higher than me, I'm not going into your house. We can sit outside if you want, I'm giving you this. That means that you have an hour to leave. And we sat there until 59 minutes, and then he came again, and he said, okay, your hour is over, now live with us. And they stood there when he took off the mezuzah and we took off the flag, and they left with us. They tried to convince my sister to leave the door, and they tried to convince us of crying, and they marched with us to the gate. You don't see it, but I have a photo album here for anyone who wants to watch. They came back to Palestine, him and my brother. They get back, I think, 2 weeks after. They felt that they didn't have a closure about our house is still standing there, and the Arabs can, even though there was decided that the houses were torn down, I mean, they still have to watch what's happening to have a closure. So I didn't want to go. I didn't go. He took my brothers and they went back to Palestine, and they videotaping the house was torn down by the tractor. I didn't want to watch it. I think the first time I watched it was last year, and it was by mistake. They told me, come and watch the movie about our house, and then I saw it. And that was the worst thing I could do, to see that, because I remembered my house as a beautiful house, as a big house, and now I just remember the house and the structure in the middle of it. So I want to tell you something about Tisha B'Av, because it's now. We were in our house, we were fasting, and there was we heard about a decision that we can take our plants with us, our trees. We have 37 fruit trees in our garden. So we decided to take them with us. So he told us, I don't know why in Tisha B'Av, but it's symbolizing something. Okay, everyone go out to the garden, start digging. We're going to take the trees with us. So we pulled everything out. And it took like 6 hours, I think, even more. And then we heard that the army decided that the truck cannot go in to take the trees. There were no permissions to anyone to go in, not even to the truck. And then he said, okay, we can't take the trees without. Let's plant them back. I said, why we need to plant them back? I mean, we're so tired, we don't drink, we don't eat. Even I think there was the rabbi of Gush Katif gave a permission for everyone to drink, because he knows that everyone is busy about evacuating the houses and in the garden. We didn't drink. And we asked, why we need to plant the trees all over again? We just took them out. And he said, those are the trees that gave us food for the last 20 years, so we can't leave them here to die, so we plant them again. And I think probably the Palestinians now eating
from our tree, because the last time I saw a lady knight on the television, it was a long, long time ago, and it was after they destroyed everything, but they didn't destroy the basement. So one time there was, I don't know what channel or which one was inside, and he was filming everything that left. And I reckon that the only place that they didn't destroy was the synagogue. The synagogue was the only place that was still standing. So when he was filming, I thought, oh, there's a lesson night, there's a synagogue. And then I tried to find my house because the basement still was there. And I find my house. And after, I think, 2 hours, there was on the news, there were rockets on Ashkelon. And on the news, he said, we saw your pictures from settlement that was evacuated in the air. And the rockets now that on Ashkelon is exactly from the same place. And I thought, oh my God, it's from my house. I mean, I saw my house just 2 hours ago, and now the rocket on my new house is exactly from my house. How great is that?
מה שאני אומר לגבי הגירוש, חס וחלילה, הגירוש שהיה זה גירוש האחרון שצריך בארץ ישראל. שום מצב, לא כסף, לא כלום, לא סיוע, לא בתים, לא ארמונות, לא שום דבר. אסור שיהיה גירוש. לא יהיה גירוש. אנחנו, אני יצאתי כבר אז אחרי אולי שנה, אחרי שהגאולה שלו לפני, אמרתי לך, אנחנו רוצים לקחת את עצמנו, המגורשים, לעשות סיבוב בכל, לצערנו הרב, בבתים, ביישובים האלה שמיועדים חס וחלילה לגירוש, ולעשות שם אספות של חברים, ולעבור בית, 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 ולהסביר להם מה זה גירוש. אנשים לא יודעים מה זה גירוש. אם אנשים יודעים מה זה גירוש, הם לא היו מגרשים. עדיף למות שם. אסור לי לעשות גירוש. זה שטח ארץ ישראל, זה הורס את המשפחה, זה... אין חיים אחרי זה. זה ככה. זה בפירוש ככה. אנשים לא יודעים מה זה גירוש. אנשים לא יודעים מה זה גירוש. אני אגיד לך סיפור קטן אחד. אני הייתי פעם אחת, ביקשו לתת לי שירצה בקיבוץ. בקיבוץ...
He just said that he suggested that they all go to visit houses in Ramat Golan or in Yehuda Veshomron and explain them what is a gerush, what was really happening, because they don't know what it is. And when they hear what it really is and what it's doing for the families, and they will never leave the houses. That's what he thinks that they should do. Just die there. But I want to tell you a story about Elayti Nai was our house was near to a kibbutz. Kibbutz Yad Mordechai. It was 5 minutes driving from Yad Mordechai to Elayti Nai. And the kibbutznikim, the people who lived in Yad Mordechai, they really, really want us out of there. They were supporting the government that we should leave Gush Katif. And they were standing with big signs in front of the junction that lived... the junction between Elayti Nai and Yad Mordechai with big signs. Get out of your houses, you're not supposed to be there. There was a really, really nice people. And then the gerush happened, and the rocket that Elayti Nai was accepted as a gift from the Palestinians started to fall on Yad Mordechai. Yeah. And he was asked by a...
Timur?
He was tutoring some boy in school, Yad Mordechai. And the head minister asked him to give a lecture. He asked everyone, I think, and him included, the teachers, to give a personal story about something that happened to them in their life. And he told her, okay, I want to talk about the Gerush. And he told him, no, you cannot talk about the Gerush. And he said, why not? It's my personal story. No, you cannot talk about the Gerush here. It's a kibbutz. They don't like you very much. They will throw tomatoes on you. do not talk about the Gerush. And he said, no, I'm going to talk about the Gerush. And there was not only children and their parents. It was a big, some kind of convention on 70 families. And he got in and he tell them the story. He presents himself. He told them, my name is, I want to show you a movie, and after the movie, you could ask me any questions you want, and everything else that you need to know. And he showed them the movie, our movie, from LA-C9. And the light was off, and when the light was on, he saw the whole faces covered with tears of the whole people. That was a really, really easy movie. The whole movie is really tough to watch. And then they told him, is that a Gerush? We didn't know that what happened. So he told them, you were standing with big signs in front of my house and tell me, go out. And they said, yeah, we didn't know that now the rockets were falling on our houses. And we didn't know that that's what really happened, that they come into your house and they tell you now to move. So what did you think? We thought that we just move, just change place of living. And they were shocked. And he said, we need to do that in every place that still thinks like that. I mean, every place, mostly it's kibbutzim. It's kibbutz that thinks that the inatkut was a good idea. And they didn't even know what the meaning of that. And he needs to move place by place with a movie and let them watch. Even they didn't want to ask him anything. After they watched the movie, we have no question. You want to ask something? No, but we're really, really, really sorry about what we did. So now you're sorry. So, yeah.
Gerush means literally
explosion. Disengagement is the inatkut is the good word for the gerush. Yeah.
אני הייתי מאוד קשור לגוש קטיף, שמה, אבל אח שלי היה שם, הייתי בזברות, ביקרתי את גוש קטיף, ביקרתי את המון שובים.
איפה בגוש הוא היה?
מדוע בלב קרים. הייתי בהמון מקומות, היינו בכפר מימון, בערב בגירוש, בצעדה הגדולה, שטפתי בצעדה לירושלים, שסיפרתי עליה, אחרי הגירוש, שמוכר ש... אמרו לי, אנשים הלכת, אז אני הגעתי לחושב שזה היה עמדת התמונה, וביקשו עזרה מאנשים בשביל לפנות בתים, כי אנשים פשוט הלכו, אישרו את הכל שם. וקחתי משם, מעל המיטה של התינוק, קחתי משם גדול מצוות אישור לארץ ישראל, למעשה בראשית. היה משהו יפה שהילד הקטן קצת גם, ואני שאלתי מישהו שם, לא היה אף אחד שהיה לשאול, אבל אני שאול את הכל שאמרתי שיכול לקחת את זה מזכיר. אז לקחתי ושמתי את זה מעל המיטה של הילד שלי, ועד היום יש לי את זה. אני זוכר שכשפניתי את הבית בעצמונה, אז מישהו אמר לי, תזור עוד מעט מחרימים את הבית, ואני מתחילתי דברים מהבית, היה שם סיפוחי התמונה, היה שם... אני מוציא דברים מהבית, ואומרים לי, תצא תצא מהר, ופתאום אני רואה את הפרק טובה, ופשוט ככה מסתבר. ואחרי, אני זוכר שמשם נסעתי לתחנה המרכזית באשקלון, לא הייתי נייד, הייתי באוטובוסים, והדבר שזעזע אותי מאוד היה שהעולם כמנהגו נעש.
עולם כמנהגו
נעש. היו אנשים שומעים מוזיקה. פשוט ישבתי שם על המדרגות, אני רואה שם על המדרגות מאוד במקרה של אשקלון, ואנשים, פשוט ישבתי ובכיתי כמו קטן, אנשים לשאול אותך, מה אתה חושב על אנשים שבעקבות דברים האלה או דברים שדומים להם שיקרו או חס וחלילה שיקרו, שבגלל זה היחס שלנו למדינה נהפך להיות יחס שלילי. זאת אומרת, הם גם עוזבים את המדינה, ובגלל זה הם נגד מדינת ישראל. איך אתה
היית אומר? תראה, אני אגיד לך.
אנשים מאבדים קשר, כן.
Basically, if I understood you correctly, the bottom line wants to know how do you react to people who have now a negative view on the state of Israel because of what happened. You know, that's right. That's the bottom line question. Should you know, we be against whatever? Become anti-Zionist.
אני אגיד לך, אני הייתי שנתיים חתום לצבא. שנתיים, הייתי מחיוב, חתום לצבא שנתיים. והיה את הגירוש, אמרתי, אני משתחרר מהצבא. שרתי מהצבא, סיפרנו פה, שרתי מהצבא. היום אני עושה מילואים. אני עושה מילואים כבר מהגירוש, לא אפסק יום אחד. כל שנה 37 יום. כל שנה 37 יום מילואים. לא מבטר. יש לי הבת שלי, הנה היא גם קצינה בצבא. הבן שלי לוחם בגבעתי. הבן שלי לוחם בהנדסה, והבת שלי קצינה במודיעין. הנה כל הילדים שלי, כולם עושים מילואים, אין מצב כזה שלא עושים מילואים. אין דבר כזה שהיה גירוש, הדבר הכי קשה שקרה לישראל קרה. אבל המדינה, הארץ, האנשים, זה, קודם כל זה הכי חשוב שיש, האנשים והארץ. ולכן כולם צריכים לעשות הכל של המדינה. הגירוש היה בגלל, אני לא רוצה לעשות פוליטיקה, כי זה ממש דבר שאי אפשר לגמור איתו, וזה יצא מכוער, צריך לסיים פה באווירה טובה. ולכן צריך להגיד, ארץ ישראל חשובה, הכי חשובה. עם ישראל הכי חשוב. צריך לעשות כולם בשביל שעם ישראל יישאר שלם וחזק. אין מה לעשות.
I understand that everyone understood the answer.
No?
No? Okay. He said that he gave our personal story that he left the army 2 years before the Gerush.
Before end of his term.
He left the army 2 years before he was supposed to leave the army because of the Gerush, and he's still doing reserve service, and he's doing this 7 years, every year 37 days, just him. And I'm doing reserve. I was an officer in the army too. My brother is in Givati. I don't know if you know what it is, but and he's doing reserve too, and my other brother and my sister is now an officer in the army. So he said, even though that happened, and it's a very, very, very bad thing that happened, Israel is the most important thing for the Jewish people. Everyone, all the Jews, especially in Israel, have to do everything for Israel to stay strong and whole. And because it's the most important thing, we or everyone else shouldn't be affected by the fact that one government did what she did. And I want to tell you something about continuing to your story about taking something out of the house that you have to evacuate. My dad was in, it was the first in a school, the first disengagement in Yamit, in 1982. There were places near Egypt that was evacuated by the Israeli government. I think 3 settlements, I'm not sure about that. And he was a young officer in the army, and they sent him to evacuate other people's houses. And he said, okay, they wasn't supposed really to evacuate the houses. They were supposed to give give the security around. And he said, okay, I'm not going to do anything to help someone move someone from his house. And there is a very, very famous picture from Yamit that people who live there close themselves inside. I think the Beit Knesset, I'm not sure.
No, Mikla.
Never mind. They closed themselves and they were standing on the roof and they were holding a big sign, a map.
it was signed there, we're never going to leave our house, something like this. And when everything was over, he went up there and he took it. He took the big sign, and we have it in our house now. And there's a picture of him standing near this place with this. And when it happened, and the soldier who gave us to everyone the note about leaving your houses, they are all pilots. And when they came, he told them, look, I was exactly like you. I was supposed to do what you're doing, and I said no. And this is the picture, and this is the original sign that was standing there. You could say no too. I mean, if you all would say no, what the government would do? I mean, we were still in our houses. But this is political, and I don't want to talk about politics.
For someone who lives here, I've lived here my whole life, you know, so spent some time in Israel, I think, and I'm always very hesitant to talk about Israel because I live here. And, you know, it's my views are colored by that fact, as we all are. So I think it's very important for us here to hear from people who have gone through an extremely difficult experience, and they are doing well, and I'm happy to hear that at least you know two-thirds of people are up on their feet and they are working, and we are making lots of progress, but that we have such, you know, people, the love and the dedication to the land, and I want to thank you for telling your personal story, and I think even the two of you don't agree on everything. I truly didn't agree with everything that was said. It's okay. Right, that's right. But
and we need to do everything to help those people.
Amen.
That's what we're
right.
Doing.
The most important thing is to help it on the personal level, as I started. So I want to thank you, and should take the importance of Eretz Yisrael to heart as a lead up to the Tisha B'Av and all year round. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.